Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is musician and artist David Solid Gould. Gould studied trumpet in grade school and soon after took up piano and electric bass. His musical talent has taken him in many fascinating directions, from the 12-piece funk and soul group, the Crown Electric Company, to the highly regarded reggae-influenced John Brown's Body. In the late 90s, he began to explore the connection between roots reggae and traditional Hebrew chants and prayers. He has released 3 CDs. His most recent is called Feast of the Passover, and it's on Sodic Records. For the last 17 years, Gould has also been a skilled candlemaker. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me, Tish.
Now, you took up the trumpet when you were in grade school. Was that a normal kid in school, you know,
should take up
an instrument? Or were you really interested in music at that point?
I was interested in music, but I don't think I was particularly inspired either way. I was in the classroom, and they wheeled in the cart of instruments and asked everybody what they wanted to play. And for some reason, the trumpet drew me in, and I started out with that.
So that's how that happened. Yeah. Well, you eventually took up other things like piano and electric bass.
Yeah.
And you say in your biography that this was all self-taught.
Yes.
Tell us how you self-teach yourself the bass.
Well, actually, when I first got a bass when I was 15, I took one lesson and decided lessons weren't for me and just got a book and started listening and started figuring out things by ear and just kind of developing my own style, I guess, you know, just doing what I do with the bass. So, and that's how it's basically gone since then. I've had only a few lessons in my life, just with teachers just to dial me in a few areas, but otherwise I've just kept it on my own.
Do you think you've missed anything, or do you think your creativity was allowed to flourish because you didn't have parameters that...
I think there's two sides to it. I've developed my own style, and I appreciate that. I approach music from my soul very much, but I also, when it comes to the technical aspects of the language of music, there's definitely areas that I could fill in more, or that if I had certain basics at the beginning, it may have changed the course of how I approach music over time.
Uh-huh. Well, you said you grew up listening to 50s bebop and classic rock. Well, what was it about those genres that you liked?
It wasn't bebop. It was actually doo-wop.
Doo-wop.
It was like 50s
doo-wop
pop music. It was just that that's what I heard in the house where I was growing up. My parents were playing that. The LPs that they had were mostly from the 50s and also some 60s rock. But I really liked the 50s. They had a lot of 45s of the Big Bopper. And I don't even remember all the artists, but the Peppermint Twist, I remember, and like all those twist songs. And I was just really into that, and then that kind of bridged into music from the 60s, which I got into in my teenage years, like classic rock, basically, and music like that.
So you were influenced by that. Now, according to your bio, also, after college, you decided you were going to make music your career.
I tried, yeah.
Well, was that a plan that you had? Were you just going to go out in the world and say, I'm going to do this?
Pretty much. I mean, I realized when I was in college, it was the first time I had really lived away from home and got to really branch out in many ways as a person, and felt confident that music was really what I wanted to do with my time. It wasn't really supported much by my parents at the time in terms of what I'd be studying in college, and I kind of went along with that. But by the time I was ready to graduate from college, I realized that I didn't want to pursue my studies in college and that I wanted to pursue music. And I did go on a quest inspired by Sun Ra, who is an inspiration of mine, and just the way his band and his orchestra lived and worked together. So I was kind of on a search for my musical soulmates, which got me traveling to Chicago and Boston to try and find, you know, work with some people that I knew from the past that I had a good connection with.
So were you actually just hanging out in places looking for gigs, or were you trying out?
No. I was in Ann Arbor, where I went to college, playing in a couple of groups. Those groups kind of dissipated, and then I moved to Chicago to work with a specific person to try and form a band with that person. So it wasn't about a gig. It didn't ever branch out, and I was just working any job I could find in the meantime to make that work. I was only in Chicago for 3 months, and once it became clear that the musical relationship wasn't happening, I joined up with a group and started doing my thing in Boston, and things went a little bit differently than planned, but that's, you know, well, that's how life goes.
Yeah. So your education was on the road.
Pretty much.
Now, let's talk about this pivotal moment in your life when you discovered reggae.
Yes.
And you say that it was, you know, it's changed your life in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it is an actual moment that I recall. I had heard reggae before, and I actually remember even in 1989, I went and saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who I really loved, opening up for the Wailers. Or actually, it was the opposite. It was the Wailers opening up for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I remember not really paying attention to the Wailers, even though they were right in front of me. I was standing right by the stage, and just all I could think, I remember was, why is this group still playing? Didn't their singer die? And I can't even believe now that I saw Aston Family Man Barrett play the bass in 1989 and didn't even really consciously register it while it was happening. But I was at a Grateful Dead show in 1994 or 1995, and I used to go there and sell candles, actually, in the lot.
Really?
And I heard Bob Marley being broadcast through some loudspeakers, and it was a live show, and I didn't recognize what it was, but for some reason on that day, could have been the headspace I was in or just where the moon was, but for some reason I felt it that day, and I stopped in my tracks, and I remember just listening and feeling it, and I didn't even know what it was, really, and I went and asked the people that were playing the music, and they told me it was Bob Marley, and on that day, I realized that I needed to find out more about that music that I heard.
Well, what do you think it was that grabbed you? Was it the beat or the message? Or?
I think a lot of it had to do with the rhythm. Just the rhythm of the music. I don't think I was listening to the words at the time, even though Bob Marley's lyrics are very inspirational to me and have become very inspirational to me over time, but it was definitely the music, the feeling of the music. It brought me back to an old time. I just remember feeling like this music is old and real and powerful and important.
And so maybe it brought you to a primitive part in yourself that you recognize from it.
That's exactly it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is really... So many people were introduced to reggae, obviously, by Bob Marley.
Yeah.
What an influence he had. If only he had lived.
Even still today. Even still today. I was in Jamaica a year and a half ago for the first time, and I was shocked at how prevalent Bob Marley's music is still in his images, and everyone has such a high regard for him in their speech. He's still so present. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And he's obviously affected so many other genres of music, too.
Oh,
it's just been so widespread.
Yeah, I remember I met Alice Walker in San Francisco. She had a big picture of him in her hallway. I was so impressed by that.
I keep a picture of him up in my house.
Yeah, he's inspired so many people.
Yeah.
Now, I want to share an excerpt from your most recent CD, Feast of the Passover. This one is called Who Knows One.
Okay.
And do you want to tell us a little about it before we hear it? Or?
Sure. Well, Feast of the Passover, it includes songs from the holiday Passover that are commonly sung and heard around Passover, and so I transformed these melodies into Jamaican-style music. So this in particular song is a ska song, and it's a song called Echad Mi Yodea, and we just took the melody and did our own thing with it, basically, and it's a great song.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Let's listen to it. It's going to make you dance. Oh, it's wonderful. I love this kind of music. I honestly, when I first got your CD to listen to, I started dancing to all this stuff.
Thanks.
It's just wonderful.
Appreciate it.
Now let's talk about this transformation toward reggae and the fact that you ended up as part of John Brown's Body, which
sure.
was a great, wonderful reggae-inspired group.
Thanks.
To tell us about that experience.
Yeah,
it lasted for years.
Well, in terms of musical influence, we kind of skipped the time period when I was in college where I discovered funk and soul music, which was huge for me, and really where my direction was heading when I moved to Boston. Old funk and soul music, like Sly and the Family Stone, James Brown, all that stuff. And when I discovered reggae, it was groove music, repetitive groove music, like funk and soul music is. And so I started listening to reggae, and I was doing a gig every Thursday night at a club called the Middle East in Cambridge, and ended up meeting Tommy Benedetti, who's a drummer in John Brown's Body still today, actually. And I actually met him through, it's funny, I had a sign up looking for musicians, and a drummer got in touch with me, and after I got together with him, he said, you know, I know this other drummer I met that I think you need to meet because he's into the same music as you. Uh-huh. And so he connected me with Tommy, and then I went over to Tommy and Craig Welsh's house at the time and brought some recordings and brought my bass, and we connected there. And that was a couple of years before I joined the band. I kept in touch with Tommy and always wondered why he wasn't around that much, and I wanted to play music with him, but it didn't seem like there was an option for that. And then one day, we almost hit each other on our bikes, coming from two different ways.
Great.
And he's like, oh, you know, I've been thinking about you. The bass player in our band is leaving, and we'd love it if you could audition. And that was for John Brown's Body. And
wow.
So I decided to do it, and had only been playing reggae music on my own for about a year and collecting it, and I just discovered it, and it was so exciting to me to have this opportunity. So I got the recordings and learned the material, and then November 1997 came to Ithaca and did an audition and was asked to join the group.
Oh, wow.
On that night.
So what a moment in your life that must have been.
It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about your CD, Feast of the Passover. How did you come upon this connection between reggae and Hebrew chants and prayers?
Yeah. It was also a very primal, natural process, nothing that was thought about too much. I was on the road with John Brown's Body in Davis, California, and an old melody that I heard in my youth came into my head. It was Sim Shalom, and it just clicked right there. I just realized that it was a reggae song, actually, instead of just this Hebrew prayer that I sang when I was a kid. And all of a sudden, all these prayers from that I remembered from my youth all were becoming clear as reggae songs. And I rented a bike and rode to a synagogue while we had a day off and got a old prayer book and started photocopying and got an acoustic guitar and just started writing the songs, writing the rhythms. And it was exciting to me as a bass player and rhythmist to be able to have these melodies that have never been transformed into reggae before. And that's been a joy for me in the project of marrying this music that's from my roots before I was born with the rhythmic style and genre that has become my favorite and most resonant in my life now.
Yeah.
So,
do you find anybody in your community, in the Jewish community, offended by the melding of these sacred, so some of this sacred prayer?
Yes, I have. Not a lot, but mostly from use of the original name that I had for the group, which offended some, but more than anything,
what was the name?
It was Adonai and I.
Oh yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, and I really felt good about. But to say that word is sacrilegious to Orthodox Jewish people, it's more proper to say Adashem, and you're only supposed to use the other word in prayer.
Oh.
But that's not something that ever bothered me. But I did end up changing the name to the Temple Rockers a couple of years ago to just hone in on what we actually do and not offend anybody. Before I knew that spamming through email was a bad thing, when I first came out in 2001 with Adonai and I spammed a lot of people in Jewish circles to try and get the word out about my CD, and my favorite insulting comment that I received back was, "Jewish reggae sounds like ketchup on a chocolate cake." That was an email.
If you're just joining us, my guest is David Solid Gould. We're talking about his CD, Feast of the Passover. And I want to talk to you more about this CD, because I want to talk to you more about the fact that you've written all the songs, you do all the arrangements. Tell us what your process is.
Sure. And again, the melodies I did not write. Mm. That's important to note. Mm. So these songs kind of existed already. I'm more filling in the arrangements and rhythmical aspects of it, writing the bass line, figuring out how the rhythm is all going to go together. And again, for the third time, I'll say it's a very primal and almost in my body process where I just sing the melody and feel what it feels like to me. And before long, there's a bass line there, there's a drum beat there, and the rest of it kind of follows. But it's really inspired by the root feeling of these melodies in a rhythmical context.
Well, I want to play another excerpt from the CD. This one's called Once We Were Slaves. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that one?
I'd love to,
It's wonderful.
One of my favorites, and this track features Leonard Sparrow Dillon from the Ethiopians, old-time reggae singing group from the 60s and 70s, and also the Silvertones, who are another singing group that are still alive today. And I recorded them singing on this when I went to Jamaica a year and a half ago. That was part of the reason I went. I've become friends with Leonard Dillon over time, brought him to Ithaca for a concert a couple of years ago, and we still keep in touch. So it was fun to teach these Rastas how to sing in Hebrew, which is something that they had never done before. Actually, I have on YouTube, you can go to YouTube YouTube.com/dsolidg, and you can see footage of my sessions in the studio in Jamaica and watch the process of me teaching them Hebrew and whatnot. So
that's great. Well, let's listen to it. Once We Were Slaves. Absolutely love that piece.
Thanks.
It's gorgeous, and it's
thanks.
So poignant.
Yeah.
And do you feel, as somebody who's melding these different styles, that you should be political?
You know, in that context, I don't really get involved in the politics of Judaism or Israel or anything like that, if that's what you mean.
No, I didn't mean that. I just meant in general politics. Bob Dylan is a folk singer.
I'm interested in politics. I vote. I'm not through my musical personality, I don't really speak out politically. Mm-hmm. I have strong views on my own as a person, but I haven't expressed them through my music as of yet.
Uh-huh. Do you think you will?
I'm not sure. I guess it depends on which way the world goes and how inspired I am, but generally like to keep the music to the music. To me, it's politics have nothing to do with music.
Ah, that's interesting. That was what I wanted to know from you.
Yeah.
Whether you think entertaining and music should be separate.
Well, I think that there's a power there when people believe in artists, that they'll listen to them, and maybe artists can get people to vote, or if somebody really is inspired by a certain artist, maybe their point of view will affect the fans. I think there's power there, but music is sacred, and it has nothing to do with politics, in my opinion.
Okay.
Though you can write a song about politics, still the music is something separate.
Oh, that's interesting. That's what I was getting at. Now, do you study the Hebrew texts? Study?
Not really. A lot of my Hebrew, the intake for me in Hebrew was when I was a child up to through when I was 15 years old is when I did my learning in that area. Getting back into this project here was kind of a revival for me, you know, and I had to access the text to read them again and sing them. But a lot of it was already inside of me from just remembering from my youth.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, what is it like for you to perform live once you've written these and rehearse them behind the scenes? Does anything change when you have an audience reflecting off of it?
Well, we perform in a very organic way. We definitely have arrangements, but the songs are different each night. They flow according to the feeling, according to what solo is being played. We improvise the forms a lot, called on the spot by myself and the trombone player. We'll do different rhythmic acrobatics, I guess.
So you're almost creating while you're going along, depending on the
There's definitely a form, but there's also some improvisation within the genre context of reggae, and you know, when we perform, I think of us as a reggae band, not as a Hebrew band or a Jewish band. It's reggae music, and it just happens to be the melodies taken from ancient Hebrew music, but it really sounds like late 60s to mid 70s Jamaican reggae music. That's what we go for.
I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
I was so fascinated.
Thanks.
When I heard that's what you were doing. Let's talk a little bit about the Temple Rockers.
Yeah.
Tell us about it. It's a nine-piece band, you play live.
Yep. It consists of musicians from the central New York area, Rochester, Syracuse, and Ithaca. When we released Feast of the Passover in 2009, we were doing a bunch of gigs. We're not playing in clubs too much these days. We do private events a lot when we get called on, and depending on what's going on in my life, I'm pursuing gigs or not. So, you know, it really banks on that. It's a niche group, and so that's why private events sometimes work better. It's hard to get a lot of people to come out to the clubs at this point, at least in the United States where I live, but that we have fans all over the world that keep in touch with us. But it's a financially challenging venture. And so when we get called on, we definitely come out and play, and we keep it active, but we're not touring right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. This music seems like it would have reached beyond the United States,
yes.
all the music that you do.
Yes.
And how are you having that happen? How
well, of course, the internet is big, and Sonic distributes all over the world, or actually, I don't know if all over the world, but I know they are in Europe. There was an old site where you could put your MP3. I think it was MP3.com or something like that back in the day. And I used to, when I first released my music, I was getting very high chart ratings in MP3.com, like top 10 in world music and Jewish music. So a lot of people around the world heard my music then, before that site was axed.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
So I still get emails from Siberia to Argentina to Australia. I still get emails from Israel of people that love the music and want us to come to their country, but it all comes down to money, unfortunately.
That's right. Now, before we run out of time, I want to play one more excerpt from the CD. This is called Next Year in Jerusalem.
Yes,
tell us a little bit about this one.
Yeah, this track is a little different than the others. It's a little more of a modern feel. It features some of my favorite musicians that aren't regularly in the Temple Rockers, including Craig Akira Fujita, who's the vocalist for Pressure Cooker in Boston, and the Joint Chiefs, and a friend of mine, and also the renowned saxophone player Yuri Unikov from Romania plays the saxophone on this track. If there's going to be a hit from this record, this will be the one that pumps in the dance clubs. So
let's listen to it. I think it's wonderful.
Thanks.
I like the sound of the chorus kind of thing that goes on in it. Well, do you perform any of your music in schools or in front of children? Because I think
children would
love this kind of thing.
We have, and it's been very positive. Yeah, in New York City, we performed at a museum, like a Jewish history museum, I think, and we've been invited to play at camps and bar and bat mitzvahs and various events for kids, and it's been, they respond very positively.
Now, do you think you'll always pursue this kind of music, or are you going to run out of ideas in regard to this?
Well, it's funny. My recording output has been mostly through John Brown's Body and this music, but I actually play lots of different kinds of music and record on my own and plan on releasing more of my music over time. I'm going to probably always do this project in my life. I know that I'm going to do a Hanukkah album one at some point called The Festival of Lights. That's what I'm looking for. That's in process, and I'm not in a rush. Again, I have other things going on that kind of keep me from working on music as much as I'd like to these days, but when I get the chance, that album will come out sometime.
Oh, I look forward to that.
And there's a remix of Feast of the Passover coming out in March of 2011 as well, called Dub of the Passover, that will also be on Sadek Records, and that's being mixed by the renowned producer Bill Laswell.
So what's happening with that, though? And is it being remastered? Well, why is it coming out?
Well, they're taking the tracks and remixing them. A lot of times in Jamaican music, the remixes of tracks of vocal tracks are on the flip side of the 45.
Ah.
It's kind of it's called dub, and it's a bass and drum heavy mix where the vocals aren't focused on, and it's a lot of effects are applied generally, and it's kind of another interpretation of the original tracks. So it's a manipulation of the original tracks.
Oh, interesting. It almost sounds like you're turning it into disco.
Words. And they do use the word disco. Actually, they call them disco dub plates a lot of the time. It's not changing the style of the music. It's focusing on certain aspects of the music that maybe weren't as highlighted in the original vocal mix.
Mm. Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
I wondered what that meant. Now, you're joining some old friends from John Brown's Body next year and reviving the Millionaires of Love.
Yeah, the Millionaires of Love. Yeah, the Millionaires of Love were a group that used to play around Ithaca. Ithaca a few years ago, in which I actually played the drums and not the bass, which is bass is usually my primary
you
instrument.
You play the drums as well?
Yeah. And so that was my debut playing the drum kit. This time around, though, in this revival, I'll be playing the bass. And we're also around a 9-piece group when we have everybody there. And we play a combination of covers of really obscure and classic Jamaican music from the early 60s to the early 80s. And then we also do some old school John Brown's Body material that can't be heard by John Brown's Body now since Kevin Kinsella left the group. And we also do some original material. So we'll be playing around Ithaca, New York a couple of times a month at least and basically sticking to that unless we get called beyond. But there's also been talks of a mini John Brown's Body reunion from, you know, the players that used to be in the group before
it
kind of shifted.
Do it.
So we'll see what happens with that. And we also are going to try and bring Leonard Dillon from the Ethiopians back to Ithaca at some point within the next year and do some shows with him around the Northeast.
Wow, that's fascinating. You seem like somebody who's just fascinated by music, you know, I mean, all kinds of instruments that you've mastered. Are there any ancient instruments that you would ever want to bring into this genre that you have created that you haven't pursued?
Like what?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the names of any, but I think about people like Lorena McKennitt who bring back old Celtic instruments and start learning those. And
you know, it's interesting. People have recommended to me, why don't you bring in more klezmer aspect into your group? You know, bring in violins and banjos. But the truth is that it's the reggae that gets me. And so reggae was formed in the late 60s, early 70s, and the instruments used in reggae are the instruments that I want to use in the Temple Rockers because it's about the reggae mostly and accessing the melodies from these old songs. But I'm not trying to recreate something from the past
But there is a klezmer, you know, flavor to some of your music. Just a touch.
A little bit.
You know.
Yeah, a little bit.
And, which
not
I,
on purpose.
Not
no, on
but
purpose.
I find it fascinating.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
probably
I found
built into the melodies more than anything.
Yes, exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. Now, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to bring up the fact that you, for 17 years, have been a really skilled candle maker.
Thanks, yeah.
Tell us about this.
Yeah, well, when I graduated from college and decided that I wanted to pursue music, I was looking for a way to supplement my music where I didn't have to work for the man, if you will. And so I had been getting into candles in college just for fun, and people started buying them, and it just kind of came with me. When I went to Chicago, I brought my candle-making equipment when I was doing my music thing and got into 4 or 5 stores in Chicago, and then I moved to Boston, got into 4 or 5 stores there, and then Urban Outfitters picked up my line, and that enabled me to get my own shop. And had a business for a few years in Boston, went out of business, and went on the road for 5 years with John Brown's Body. And then when I got off the road with John Brown's Body, got back into it, and I formed Sunbeam Candles back in 2003. And
we're
solar-powered,
right?
Local, but we actually serve about 500 stores nationally, and we're a solar-powered candle-making company, employ 8 people locally, and that's my full-time gig. We listen to reggae music almost all the time there.
No, I would never have thought
I DJ. That's one of my favorite parts of the job. But, you know, it takes up a lot of energy to have my own business, and I really enjoy it, luckily. It definitely affects my musical output, too. Limits it, I should
say.
Yeah.
Well, you are a real inspiration to people. You have been able to live your life as an entrepreneur.
Thanks.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's
thank
amazing.
You. Appreciate that.
Well, David Solid, well, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to give some contact information?
Anytime, yeah. If you want to check me out online, davidgouldmusic.com. You can check out sunbeamcandles.com as well. The Temple Rockers are up on Facebook as David Solid Gould and the Temple Rockers. And we're also on MySpace.
Great. So, well, yeah. David Gould, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tish.
And we
appreciate
look forward
it.
To some future output.
It's a great show. Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.